from KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This morning, the Senate released the details of the Republican bill to repeal the Affordable Care Act. The draft plan, called the Better Care Reconciliation Act of 2017, includes provisions to dramatically roll back Medicaid, end penalties for people who do not have insurance, and eliminate federal funding for Planned Parenthood. The bill, which could come to a floor vote next week, would also repeal the tax increases imposed by the Affordable Care Act. The bill is similar to the measure to repeal and replace Obamacare that narrowly passed the House last month, though it provides more subsidies for low-income people than the House bill did. We're going to discuss the Senate bill and what's in it and its potential impacts with our guests. Carrie Feibel is here with us in studio, KQED's health editor.
Good morning, Carrie.
Hi. Also want to welcome Paige Winfield Cunningham, health policy reporter for The Washington Post. She was the first to report on the details of the Senate bill in a story yesterday, and congratulations for that, and thank you for joining us on Forum this morning.
Great to be on.
Yeah, let me begin with you, if I may, Paige Winfield Cunningham, and let's talk about really what the highlights are here. I think maybe the first thing that needs to be mentioned is, by some people's estimation, the Medicaid cuts are even worse than those in the House.
Right. So this would cut Medicaid more over the long term, but not until 2025, which, of course, is well past any potential tough reelection campaigns for these senators. And so it's starting in 2025, Medicaid would be pegged to an even slower growth rate than under the House bill. So on the front end, that this Senate bill would more slowly and gradually phase out Medicaid expansion, but then on the back end enact these deeper cuts. And I think by doing that, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is hoping to still achieve savings in the bill, but also possibly make it more politically palatable to some of these moderates who don't want to look like they're immediately depriving a lot of low-income folks of their health coverage.
Yeah, he's got quite a tightrope to walk because he has moderates who find things in this bill that they don't like, and he's got conservatives who find things in the bill that he doesn't, that they don't like, and all he needs is two to go against him, and that's possibly the end of it. But I wanted to ask, before we get into politics about this, I wanted to ask you about just some of the details, because the devil is always there. This is tied to income as opposed to age, which was what was in the House, right?
Right. So I think the most notable thing out of the Senate bill today is that it actually would mostly preserve the subsidies available under Obamacare. And that's really striking because, you know, that's part of the Affordable Care Act Republicans had hammered against for so long. But these subsidies would be very similar. The income would be the cutoff would be slightly lower at 350% of the federal poverty level instead of 400% like under Obamacare. But just like Obamacare, these would be pegged to premiums as a way of trying to ensure that they're more affordable for people than under the House bill. And so that's just really interesting because it's something that could dismay conservatives. They want to appear that they're really chopping away at most of the Affordable Care Act. But, you know, the fact that this really preserves a big part of the ACA is really interesting and could make moderates a little bit happier. But you're absolutely right. It's not at all clear at this point that McConnell's going to have enough votes for this bill.
It's also not clear that the bill that was released this morning will be the bill that's going to necessarily go over to the House. And he wants to move this through within a week before the July 4th recess. That's really quite a it's a big bill in itself to face.
That's correct. And we still are waiting for a score from the Congressional Budget Office. That's probably won't come out till Monday. You know, aides have stressed that this is a discussion draft. And so it's open to revision. You know, they could pull different levers depending on what the CBO score looks like. They could end up leaving some of the taxes in place or changing some of the years that certain things are phased out as a way of trying to get to that those 50 votes that they would need to pass the bill next week.
Well, let me bring Carrie Feibel into this. She's our health editor for KQED. And Carrie, New York Times is saying that this is a permanent restructuring, essentially, of Medicaid. I mean, that the people who are going to be hurt most are the people in nursing homes and also opioid people who are, how shall I put it, those who are addicted to opioids, part of this opioid epidemic that we keep reading about.
Exactly. And that could happen on different levels. It could happen through those people losing Medi-Cal coverage here in California, or if they were getting their own individual insurance through Covered California, they might not be able to afford it anymore. It really depends on where they fall, you know, on these subsidies. Paige has a great point about those subsidies are being preserved by the Senate, but it's really unclear how that would trickle down and affect real patients here in California. because if insurance companies are released from regulations of what they need to include, such as maternity or mental health or substance abuse treatment, then the plans might have higher deductibles. So even if people are able to get that assistance from the government, they might not be able to meet the deductible anyway, and so they might forego treatment. So on paper, you might have people insured, but whether they're actually able to afford to go get the treatment, it remains to be seen.
Well, there's a wider berth for the state in all this, supposedly, but we're also talking about cutbacks that go over to about over a decade to about $800 billion, the way some are estimating.
Right, and California would see a big chunk of those cutbacks, but, I mean, Medi-Cal is everywhere. It covers one-third of Californians, half of our births. Again, many people in nursing homes, many people with disabilities really depend on this coverage. And California has done a lot to sort of work already with flexibility within Medicaid to, you know, have programs to keep older people in their homes instead of having them go into a nursing home. And, you know, it remains unclear if some of those optional programs would be able to survive.
Isn't this, I mean, to put it bluntly, all about maybe cutting taxes for people who are more affluent and wealthy?
It's true. I mean, this bill gets rid of all of the taxes that the Affordable Care Act imposed to pay for.
Just repeals Obamacare taxes.
Except one called the Cadillac tax, which is a tax on so-called fancy plans that some people have in their jobs. But yeah, all those taxes are gone on medical devices and so forth. And those will mostly go to high-income people.
And Paige Winfield Cunningham, this really cuts deeply in long-term cuts for low-income Americans, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it would really affect the options that that lower income folks have. And it's a really different kind of view on what the health insurance landscape should look like. You know, the Affordable Care Act envisioned a world where there are a large swath of people that are low income that can get Medicaid coverage. Now, if the Senate bill became law, there would be subsidies that would be available for some of these folks to buy private coverage. But certainly their, you know, out-of-pocket costs for their premiums and other costs would be much greater than were they to be able to remain on Medicaid. And so the outlook is just really different for a lot of these lower-income people.
We should also mention this eliminates funding for Planned Parenthood, which we said earlier, but also removes language that restricts federal subsidies for health plans from covering abortions. And you've got President Trump calling the House bill mean. This is, by some lights, I was reading, in fact, Jonathan Chait in New York Magazine. He said this is even meaner in some ways. What are you seeing from lawmakers at this point, Paige?
It's really interesting as things unfold on the Hill. You know, we've heard that there are three Republican senators who are going to announce opposition later today. Now, we don't know if that means they're saying they're actually going to vote against the bill or whether they're trying to position themselves to demand more changes to it. One of those members we're trying to confirm could be Senator Mike Lee, who has been regarded as one of the conservatives who's really on the fence about whether to support this bill.
Senator from Utah. You mentioned.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. You know, he came out with actually a Facebook video on Tuesday pretty sharply criticizing leadership for how this whole process has rolled out. I tend to think at the end of the day, though, that the conservatives will probably vote for this. I mean, it's a little bit hard to imagine that they would want to be the vote against repealing Obamacare after they've promised to do this for so long. I tend to think at this point it's going to be harder for McConnell to get the Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Portman from Ohio, maybe Dean Heller from Nevada on board, particularly Murkowski, because as you mentioned, this still has the defunding Planned Parenthood provision in it. And that's something, of course, she supports abortion rights. So that would really turn her off. And so I imagine that the biggest struggle is still going to be among these moderates as this plays out over the next week, although the conservatives could definitely put up a ruckus as well.
President Trump's been saying that Democrats are obstructionists. I don't think they are going to necessarily get any Democrats aboard here. But from what I'm reading, some of these Republicans on both sides are angry about how secretive this process was behind closed doors.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is important to note that virtually every single large piece of legislation on Capitol Hill is written behind closed doors to some extent. That was true with the Affordable Care Act. There were lots of negotiations that went on behind the scenes. But the big difference here is that you saw lots of public hearings with the Affordable Care Act over a year or so. And Republicans were allowed to introduce and offer amendments, and some of those amendments were adopted, even though they were mostly technical. You don't see any of those efforts here with the Republican bill. There were a few hearings in the House. There have been none in the Senate at all. And Democrats have not been allowed at any point in the process to offer input. And so, you know, that I think a lot of Republicans, even in the rank and file, have been forced to admit that the process is very close and have been very frustrated. You know, as Mike Lee said in that Facebook post, he, talking to his constituents, he said, "Are you frustrated that you don't know what's in the healthcare bill?" I'm frustrated too. You know, he was originally in this group of about a dozen Republicans that were meeting to talk about healthcare and thought they were going to be very involved in the process. And then it ended up just being written by, you know, McConnell staffers and budget committee staffers and a pretty select group of staffers. And so the way, you know, I think from McConnell's perspective, he just wants to get this passed and off his plate because it's a real kind of a hot mess.
Yeah, but he wants to get it passed within a week. I mean, you got to be realistic about this. We're talking about the Senate health care bill that the Republicans are putting forward. And as you can tell, Paige Winfield Cunningham is online with us from the nation's Capitol, health policy reporter for The Washington Post. Carrie Feebo, KQED's health editor, is here with us in studio. I want to hear from you, our listeners. I want to hear from you, our listeners. And if you have some thoughts about this, or certainly if you have questions, and there are many questions I'm sure that many of you have, feel free to join us. Our toll-free number is available, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. The number for you to call for your questions or your comments is 866-733-6786. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or post comments on our website or our Facebook page, or email us at kqedtalk@gmail.com. That's kqedtalk@gmail.com. And, Carrie, let's talk a little bit more with you about what this has to say about Californians and their coverage.
Well, again, and this has always been the case, even back to the House bill that failed and the House bill that did pass. When I was in Sacramento talking to health officials about this, Medi-Cal was always their primary concern. I mean, calling this a repeal and replace bill is a misnomer. It's inaccurate. It is an Obamacare rollback. It doesn't really replace any Obamacare with anything. It just sort of pulls back a lot of the assistance that
a lot of it just goes with the language of Obamacare and kind of modifies it.
Right.
And, yeah.
But it's really two laws in one. I mean, and in Sacramento, they're really concerned about the cuts to Medi-Cal. It's almost a whole nother bill that's getting less coverage. And they know that if there's options that states could say, well, we don't want to require insurers to cover pre-existing conditions. It's unclear if that's in the Senate bill or not. California would not go for that. It would probably maintain as many consumer protections as it had the choice to maintain. But these Medi-Cal cutbacks are huge. There would be no choice. The state would have to absorb them. And then there would be some tough decisions about would we raise taxes in California to keep those people on the rolls? Would we cut reimbursements to doctors or nursing homes, which are already pretty low compared to other states? There's no real good choices here for California.
And before I bring our callers and listeners into this, Paige Winfield Cunningham, if I go back to you for just a moment, talk about the timeline a bit, and when are we going to get a CBO score on this? That is a Congressional Budget Office score.
The thought is that the CBO score will probably come out Monday, and then that would give members a couple of days to tweak things potentially before, you know, holding a vote near the end of the week. That's, of course, assuming, as we've discussed, that it seems like the votes are coming together for all of this. If the Senate passes the bill, of course, then it would have to either be voted on as is by the House, or it would have to be reconciled with the House version. We're not exactly clear what that process would look like quite yet. I have heard some rumors that if the Senate passes it, the House is just going to try to pass the same thing and ship it off to President Trump very quickly for a signature. But that's a little bit hard to believe, too, just looking at this legislation. There's a lot of things in there that conservatives in the House would probably object to.
President Trump needs to rack up something that could be called a victory. But at the same time, he's been calling for more heart for the House bill. I don't know what that means. Do you have a sense that you could communicate? He says that it's mean, but it also needs more heart.
Right. I think when you look back at what Trump has said historically about health care, I mean, remember that he used to support single payer. He's praised a lot of the government-run health care in Canada and other countries. You know, he's not a conservative, and I don't think he shares a lot of the real, opposition in a sense to the Affordable Care Act, even though he's kind of mimicked that because that's kind of what you have to do as a Republican. And, you know, he himself has sort of admitted that he doesn't really understand healthcare policy. So a lot of the statements...
Did he say that? I think he said it's complex, more complex than he thought.
Right. He said it's more complex than he thought. And a lot of the statements throughout his campaign, you know, he said, I think sounded a little bit simplistic to a lot of people. You know, he said, we're not going to let people die on the streets, you know, and that sort of thing. And so I think now in looking at what Republicans have come up with and how it would roll back insurance coverage for a lot of people, I don't know if he really realized at the outset, you know, earlier this year that that's sort of the direction things were heading. And so I think this just reflects, you know, he wants to pass a bill that he can praise, that he can brag about, that he can say is, you know, improving healthcare. And, you know, he's realizing it's a real public relations disaster when the CBO says that it would result in millions more Americans uninsured. And so I think that's why you've seen him expressing some dismay behind the scenes.
All right. Let me try to get to as many calls as we can. We begin, Mike, with you. Join us. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. You know, one of the things that seems never to be mentioned in the healthcare debate is the EMT ALA, the mandated treatment that of the uninsured that's existed since 1986. Presumably, Obamacare was intended to resolve that problem as much as possible. And by any new bill will add to the roles of the uninsured, then their costs, they have to be treated by law. And if they're not treated ahead of time and given ongoing care, their ultimate emergency treatment is far more expensive. But that cost goes right back on the bill of people with insured. Why is this never brought into the debate, it seems, either by Democrats or Republicans? But you think for sure Democrats would bring this.
Yeah, it's an important point. Let me go to Carrie on this. Carrie?
I mean, I have heard Democratic officials, elected and unelected, talk about this in California. It was an ongoing problem. All over the country before Obamacare, people would just come to the emergency room for their care. And that's going to happen again if a lot more people, I mean, 23 million potentially could lose their coverage under this bill. They're going to go to the ER and they can't be turned away. And the ER doesn't have to cure all their illnesses. They just need to stabilize them enough to send them home. So, you know, they'll continue with those chronic issues. So it not just pushes the cost back on the states, but also onto county taxpayers at our public hospitals in San Francisco, Highland Hospital in Oakland. They're going to be very threatened by this financially, and we may see, you know, hospitals that are right on the edge, some of our rural hospitals, close or, you know, go into the red.
Let me go to more callers. Rosie joins us next. Rosie, you're on.
Yes, thank you. Would you please have Carrie talk about the impact of this Republican plan to essentially gut Medicaid on the plan for single payer in California? And I've read the single payer bill, and a lot of the funding is supposedly going to come from Medicaid and Medicare money from they have to get a waiver from the federal government. But both of those programs are in the sights of Republicans. So I don't understand how we could possibly afford single payer in California, given the current political climate.
Yeah, Rosie, thank you for that question. Carrie?
That's a great question and really comment. You put your finger right on the conundrum. A third of our residents in California are on Medi-Cal, and you know, many of them are getting 90% of their costs paid for by the federal government right now. Under the Senate bill, that would all go away by 2023. And so California would have to pick up all the costs for those people if it's going to keep them on the rolls. And you're right, the whole single-payer bill as currently envisioned, there's not a lot of detail yet, just assumes that this bill doesn't pass, that Medicaid funding never gets cut. It just sort of rolls that amount into its financial assumptions, and that all goes out the window. So I think before California can move ahead with that, we really need to know what's going to happen at the federal level. And even if nothing happens at the federal level with this Obamacare rollback and Medicaid cutback, the Trump administration would have to give California permission to take that Medicaid money and roll it into a single-payer plan. And, you know, it's very up in the air whether they would give California that permission.
And let me thank Rosie for that call. Let me go back, if I may, to Paige Winfield Cunningham. I've got a tweet here from Elvis. That's his name. Whatever happened to the separation of church and state? This GOP bill places limits on abortion. Please discuss.
Yeah, so this is an important thing to clarify, actually. It turns out that there is language in this Senate bill which would basically ban any federally subsidized private health plan from covering abortion. We had originally thought that language would be stripped out. It probably will ultimately be stripped out because under these special rules governing budget reconciliation, the parliamentarian has said that that language cannot be in the bill. It is today, and I've heard from a lot of the anti-abortion lobbyists that they know they're going to get a lot of opposition from the pro-life crowd if they take that language out, and it could make it very hard to pass in the House. But that has been the goal all along, is to put in this language defunding Planned Parenthood and then also to restrict subsidized plans from covering abortions. And this is a fight that pro-lifers have had, you know, with the Affordable Care Act since it was passed in 2010. They objected to the fact that the marketplace plans can cover abortion, and that's why President Obama did this whole executive order. And so this is an issue that's going to be kind of a thorn in the side of the Republican Senate leadership as they try to pass the bill.
And here's Roger. Roger, thank you for waiting. You're on the air. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Yes. So my name is Raza, and I just want to ask about this. The biggest elephant in the room is that healthcare is not free market economy. We don't want people, as a society, we don't want people to die on the street. So how are we finding ways to make it a free market economy when we have a patient bill of rights? And nobody talks about this.
Well, it's we're getting a little bit of the theoretical here, but Carrie, you want to weigh in here?
Well, I mean, whether it's free market or whether it's single payer or whether we keep the Affordable Care Act or, you know, get rid of it and replace it with this Republican plan, I mean, none of these plans really affect affordability, despite the name, the Affordable Care Act. They cover insurance. They say we're going to insure more people, and the Affordable Care Act did that. 20 million people. It's a lot of people. It was a big gain. But I do understand the frustration and the confusion from people who have insurance and have seen their premiums go up. And if they're not getting that federal aid to help pay for that premium, they're seeing prices go up every year. This is a big problem in the healthcare sector. It does have to do with a lot of economics, but prices are going up, and there's nothing in any of these bills that really gets at that problem.
Again, Carrie Feibel is KQED's health editor. Here's a comment, actually a tweet from Julia, who says, having private markets set healthcare prices does not work. You can't have de facto monopolies and inflexible demand. And Trevor writes, and let me go back to you on this, Paige Winfield Cunningham. What is the path back from this bill if and when it fails on its face and Congress gets backlash from people who lost health care?
That's a really good question. Because if Republicans don't manage to pass something, they're still going to have some ongoing problems with the marketplaces, under the Affordable Care Act. And that's something that even Democrats acknowledge. You know, we've had some pretty negative news about the marketplaces in the last couple months. And actually, yesterday was the deadline for insurers in most of the states to say whether they were going to participate in 2018 and what the rates would look like. And for the first time, there's a couple dozen counties that may have no Obamacare insurer next year. And so even if Republicans don't succeed in passing a repeal replace bill, they're going to be under a lot of pressure to find a solution, you know, for these people. You know, say somebody in Iowa in one of these counties with no option, are they, you know, still going to be subject to the individual mandate? Are they going to be fined for not buying an insurance plan that isn't, in fact, available for them to buy? And so, you know, even if this whole effort stalls, we're going to have to see some clarification from both the Trump administration and probably Congress as well as to, you know, what the current law is going to look like going forward.
And let me go forward with another caller, and that's Yi. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Yes. So I'm a volunteer with Fort Hill Community Health Center. It's out in San Jose. And the vast majority of our patients are actually on Medi-Cal. And what we've seen in the past is when there's been cuts to Medi-Cal, what happens is actually the healthcare gets even more expensive because they come back in without the preventative care done, and then they come back in with more serious conditions.
Carrie. Carrie
yes,
Feigl.
That's the pattern.
That's a pattern,
been,
isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's been documented in a lot of research studies. And, you know, it's the Affordable Care Act has not been around long enough even to see the benefit. I mean, there was a recent study that said people who got insurance under the Affordable Care Act were still going to the ER. It's not because they necessarily need to, but because that's where they know to go. So even if the Affordable Care Act sticks around in California and elsewhere, there's going to need to be efforts to make sure those people have a doctor to go to, have a so-called medical home, so that they get that preventative care, they get the drugs they need, they don't need to go to the ER, and they learn that they don't need to go to the ER, and that helps keep local costs down and state costs.
And where are we going in the Senate bill, depending, of course, how it's thrashed out with the House of Representatives, but Paige Winfield Cunningham, in terms of pre-existing conditions?
So the House bill would have allowed, would have provided these waivers so that states could basically lift this ban on insurers charging people more for people with pre-existing conditions. So that really concerned moderates in the House. The Senate version does not contain that provision. So basically it retains those protections for people with pre-existing conditions. Insurers will still be required to cover those people, and they will still be required to charge them the same premiums as they would charge healthy people.
Let me bring on another caller while we have a moment here, and that's Mark. Mark, join us. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Michael. Thanks for taking my call. I know you just touched upon this very briefly, but I'm not sure that many people, myself included, understand very well what the reconciliation process is likely to be for two versions of the bill that probably will be quite different from one another. I wonder if you could elucidate upon that just a little bit. Has there been a lot of pre-negotiation, do you think, between the Senate and House? And is this sort of pre-decided, if you will, or is this likely to bounce back and forth?
Yeah, thank you for that, Mark. Let me go to Paige Winfield Cunningham. Can you shed some light on that for us, please?
Yeah, this process, I'll try to make it simple because it's extremely complicated.
Yeah, we're short on time, so all the more.
Yeah. They're using budget reconciliation so that they can basically bypass Democrats in the Senate and pass this with only 50 Republicans plus Vice President Mike Pence. And so that's the whole reason. But there's very strict rules governing what can go in the bill. And that's part of the tricky policy part of this all. It all has to affect federal spending in some way or another.
Paige Winfield Cunningham, good to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us on Forum this morning.
Thank you.
And Paige Winfield Cunningham, again, is health policy reporter for The Washington Post. And thank you, Carrie Feibel. Carrie Feibel, again, is KQED's health editor. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Michael.
Good to have you, our listeners, with us. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. An hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. In the hour ahead, we're going to meet Colm Tobin, who is the author of a new book called House of Names. And we're also going to talk with Neon McEvoy of Chronicle Books. Stay tuned for that. It's up ahead. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.